Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard, right here on Second Helping, the program of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. And of course, Brent, longtime college football analyst, most recently right there in Jacksonville, Florida, the epicenter of Southeastern Conference football for week 10, as we'll talk about the cocktail party in just a little bit. But Brent, also a voter for the Heisman Trophy, so whether it's individual honors, whether it's team stuff, we got you covered with the encyclopedic one, as he's been called, Brent Beard. Brent, how are we doing on this Thursday morning as we're live on the channel here?
Well, happy Halloween to everybody, and I am waiting, taking a 10-year-old granddaughter and her mother trick-or-treating. I'm still haven't received my assignment yet, Trav.
I told you earlier in the week, you're flashlight guy. Yeah, you'll be flashlight guy tonight. You're safety guy.
Yeah, that's right. And if I keep from stepping in gopher holes, Trav, that'll be a real victory also.
Yeah, we don't need you with a high ankle sprain.
No.
It's getting too late in the season. Might not be able to get the tightrope surgery done.
Exactly.
Back and be able to get you back. You know, it's getting late in the season here. We don't need that, Brent.
No. I think I told you she's dressing up as a traffic cone.
Yeah.
It looks like a candy corn with a hole in the middle of it where she sticks her head out of. So,
awesome.
But listen, Brent. And again, for anybody who's driving around Jacksonville, there are plenty of traffic cones on every block, right?
There are everywhere, I think. Having lived in Tuscaloosa, Alabama for more than a couple of decades it seemed like that entire stint there were barricades. It really made me wish I had come up with the concept of the traffic cone
or the
barricade, because we would be on a private island somewhere doing this show.
We certainly would be. Yes.
If we were doing a show at all. And by the way, we appreciate you chiming in here on the program in the show chat. Here's Little Joe C checking in. He's watching. We appreciate it. Little Joe C. Good morning to you as well. But Brent, it's an interesting weekend coming up in the Southeastern Conference. Nothing really in the way of top 25 matchups, but some potentially dangerous games for some top 20-ish type of teams. A couple of those going on the road. Another one in Georgia, the nation's second-ranked team, headed back down to Jacksonville to take on the Florida Gators. Also been some – we'll get more into this actual matchup in just a little bit. But interesting news here in the last 24 hours or so as it relates to a couple of upcoming meetings in this series, because you're going to have essentially a stadium complete overhaul in Jacksonville. So 26-27, got to take that game elsewhere, and it looks like it's going to stay in sort of a neutral site venue. But it'll be interesting to see, how does the ticket breakdown work for those games coming up here in 26 and 27, Brent?
It sure will. Games going to Atlanta and also Tampa. Some people thought it may go home and home for those 2 years, but no, that's not going to be the case. And I think there may be some intentionality with that, because if you go home and home, the thought is going to come out of, well, why don't we just keep it home and home? Well, particularly for us in Jacksonville, we're glad it's not. I still say it's the biggest weekend of the year economically for the city of Jacksonville. And Travis, you know, with the stadium being rebuilt, the overhang to help on sunny days is just frankly going to be tremendous in a lot of ways. But look, money is everything, isn't it, my friend? It is. And the reality is that both coaches, Kirby Smart and also certainly the Florida regime with Billy Napier, have said part of the attraction for this game is they get a lot of money to pay to play a neutral site game. As a matter of fact, Kirby Smart said around $6 million every 2 years in order to do that, Trav. So as we know, money speaks. And we are certainly glad to have a little bit more transparency and clarity on where this Florida-Georgia game is going the next few years.
Yeah, and with it going to Tampa and Atlanta, it sounds like it's going to stay neutral site for the foreseeable future, especially yes. with this new stadium essentially coming online in Jacksonville around 2027, 2028. So absolutely, as long as the city of Jacksonville keeps making that financial commitment, which I would think would only go up
yes.
in the coming years, because it's interesting, you know, if Atlanta and Tampa hold this game and think, you know what, hey, we may want to yes. get in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to take this thing over at some right. point. That maybe helps Florida and Georgia with their leverage, say, with Jacksonville
yes.
in the foreseeable future. But absolutely, it's dollars and cents. And so Florida and Georgia in 26 and 27 will be in Atlanta and Tampa, respectively. Interesting. I think a lot of people forget that even back in the 90s, when the stadium in Jacksonville mm-hmm. that is currently there was being done, it did go home and home.
It sure did.
And unfortunately for Georgia fans, yes. Steve Spurrier was the head coach at Florida, yeah, and he absolutely. Enjoyed dropping a half hundred.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
On Georgia, wherever the game. You could play the game in Brunswick.
Yeah.
You could play
yeah.
the game in Stark. Right. It didn't matter.
No.
Spurrier loved hammering the Georgia Bulldogs, and he did that a couple of times in those home and homes.
And Trent, let me say this too, and this is for the future. But I think part of a lot of what's going on here, too, is maybe a peek into the future with this new stadium of the future. Might this mean that Jacksonville could get in a rotation in the playoff situation? The playoff is expanding. A lot of these, the early games are going to be at the sites of the higher ranked teams,
right.
Which is going to be fun to be able to see that. But we know the majority of them are going to be in bowl games, and obviously the bowls that we are familiar with, the bigger bowls. But I've got to think Jacksonville would love somehow to get into a playoff rotation to get one going in Jacksonville, which would be even bigger for this city if that happens.
I think the taxpayers that are help footing about $750
yeah.
million
no.
of this stadium enhancement, I guess you could call it. It's essentially a new stadium. They're kind of hoping for that type of additional attractions that
yes.
the city might be able to attract in addition to just the Jaguar games, because really the Jaguars are going to play in London at least one home game a year.
Sure.
So if you're a Jaguars fan, yeah. you're already losing a home game. So
right.
you need some other ways to sort of justify mm-hmm. the investment the city of Jax is making, along with Shad Khan
yeah.
making a sizable investment as the Jacksonville Jaguars owner. But certainly a lot of things to consider there. And things we are going to consider coming up for this week 10. We're going to talk about home and homes. We're going to talk about campus matchups, and we're going to get going at Reynolds Razorback Stadium Saturday. That'll be 11 a.m. Central Time, 12 noon Eastern. Ole Miss trying to keep those college football playoff hopes a flicker, Brent, after a couple of losses. October, not very kind to Lane Kiffin
no.
and his team, hoping for a better situation in the month of November. Not going to be easy. And this game, I think, is going to be a real trial of Ole Miss's mettle. And then, you know, you look ahead to next week, and you can't afford to do that, but you do have the Georgia Bulldogs coming
right.
to Oxford 1 week from Saturday. But for the here and now, you know, a tricky game potentially. Well, last time we talked about a game like this, though, for Arkansas was LSU.
Yeah.
And LSU took a lot of the mystery out of that one
yeah.
In Fayetteville. So we'll see if the Razorbacks can live up to it. Razorbacks with five wins. Razorbacks are going bowling, right, at this point, because they still have an FCS opponent, or not an FCS, but a Louisiana Tech game coming up in a couple weeks. That should guarantee them a sixth win. But, boy, you could go ahead and get that this weekend if you're Sam Pittman. You could be looking at maybe eight wins, because Missouri at the yeah. end of the season now yeah. doesn't look as formidable,
no.
even if that game is on the road.
No, and look, these teams in some ways are going in opposite directions. To me, one of the surprises with Arkansas, besides Taylen Green, and Trev, I think you and I both thought Bobby Petrino would make a big difference in this football team, and he certainly has done that. But look, in this league, when you can run the ball, and Arkansas can with Jaquindon Jackson, who has been in and out because of injuries, and then Braylon Russell steps up, and a freshman gets 175 yards, and this Arkansas defense is playing better than we thought it would. And man alive, how about Ole Miss? I mean, the numbers look good. They lead Division I in scoring defense, 11 points a game. Jackson Dart's one of the more efficient quarterbacks. But in talking with one of the Ole Miss radio guys this week, they really are not happy with where they're going right now. And the surprising thing on offense, they're struggling to run the ball. Trey Harris, their best player, has been in and out. Jackson Dart has been inconsistent. Trev, they thought they'd get more out of Juice Wells, who transferred from South Carolina. How surprised are you that these teams are in the shape they're in going into November?
Yeah, I'm not that surprised by the run game because I think Parrish is more of a complimentary back.
Yeah, right.
I like him a lot as sort of my 1B, but my 1A, I want more of a legit 18 to 20 carry guy. And absolutely, whatever you thought of Quinshon Judkins, okay? And I get it. Apparently there were issues there. I understand it from the team dynamic. That may not have been sustainable any longer. But that's the kind of guy, as we know, that could absolutely light it up in that Lane Kiffin offense. And I don't know if that offensive line has been exactly what they had hoped. I think still the skill positions are the strength, whether it's even Jordan Watkins on the outside. You said it with Harris. Didn't play last week against Oklahoma. I thought that was very evident in their explosiveness and their ability to really push the ball down the field. So his status moving forward is absolutely critical. And look, Lane's had some stinkers in Fayetteville in the past too. And not just with Ole Miss, but I remember 2014, Alabama, after losing to Ole Miss, ironically enough, took it on the road to Fayetteville and beat Brett Bielema, his Hogs at the time, 14-13. And that was one of the more ugly offensive performances you would ever see from a Lane Kiffin unit.
Yeah.
So the start to this game, obviously, everything in some ways probably benefits Ole Miss that it's an early kick.
Yeah.
Kind of get in under a lot of the other stuff that typically can crop up from a crowd perspective later in the day into the night. But yeah, this is it for Ole Miss. For Georgia really to mean much at all.
Oh, yeah.
Next
absolutely
week. And for maybe Ole Miss to have anything close to what it'll need in the tank for Georgia next week. Got to get it done against an Arkansas team again. Arkansas's looking at this situation after that impressive win over Mississippi State last week, thinking, hey, you know, we can get this thing to 8 wins.
Absolutely.
And even Texas is in Fayetteville in a couple weeks. And I think there's a bye week, second bye week coming up for the Hogs too, probably at a good time. So I think this one qualifies. I think there's too much talk about upset alert in college football, right? I think this one qualifies, though.
It sure does.
It's a legitimate upset alert situation. Vanderbilt, a little bit later in that early window, 12:45 Eastern time, SEC Network. The Auburn Tigers, a 7-point favorite at home over Vanderbilt. Auburn coming off a very impressive performance over the final three quarters of that win over Kentucky last week anyway. Auburn looking to put together a win streak in SEC play after picking up its first victory of the conference season on the bluegrass last week. Vanderbilt, we've talked about this. I think some of this with Auburn being a solid, ringing 7-point favorite in this game, you look at Vanderbilt and how it competed with Texas last week, win over Alabama, road win over Kentucky, very impressive to this stamp to this point. We both love Diego Pavia. We're all on record with all of that. But when October rolls over to November, that's when you officially begin to worry about Vanderbilt in most years. And that goes back to just sustainability from a roster perspective.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And your teams that have momentum, their roster is helping them in this point to the tune of what their top 40 to 50 players.
Right.
And maybe a team like Vanderbilt, Trav, are they limited to 30 to 35?
Yeah.
And in this league, that depth comes into play. I'm curious what you think about Auburn having seen all they wanted to of Diego last year with New Mexico State, and also Jerry Kill, Tim Beck, Eli Stowers on that team also. So they kind of know what to expect. You still got this wishbone, basically, and times an inverted bone that Auburn's going to have to be able to deal with. But look, Trav, my thing is, Hugh can be a little hard-headed at times, and you get basically, 300 yards from Hunter, Jarquez Hunter last week in a big win over Kentucky. Will Hugh continue to feed him the ball, or will he get stubborn and want to go back to the passing game? So this is an intriguing game for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, Hugh can be reminiscent of Nuke LaLoosh, the fictitious pitcher in the movie. I'm going way back with this one. Bull Durham, that was Robbins' character in that movie.
Yes.
Evan Costner, the minor league baseball players and team there. And, Nuke always wanted to give you the heat. He wants to give you the heat. He doesn't want to throw the off-speed stuff or get away from his heat. And for Hugh, it always seems like the heat is his quarterback. He wants his quarterback to be that player. And Hunter is clearly the best option that Auburn has had for the last couple of years. So here's what I think. I think what I like about Vanderbilt is, and I think Pavia has a lot to do with this culture now, is the energy and enthusiasm. I don't know what type of physical shape Vanderbilt is at this point, but I don't question the competitiveness that they're going to play with on Saturday. And Pavia has done this before at Jordan-Hare. He's not going to walk into that place thinking, oh my God, this is a little too much. That's not going to be Diego.
No.
I think Auburn can win this game. I wouldn't lay the 7. I think it's going to be a very competitive game. I think Vanderbilt covers the 7. I don't know if Andy wins outright, but I just know I wouldn't bet against Diego Pavia.
No.
If I'm picking quarterbacks in this game right now,
quarterbacks
I trust, and even offensive minds that I trust. I trust Tim Beck right now more for Vanderbilt than I trust you. So, should be a fun one Saturday at 12:45 Eastern at Jordan-Hare. Not much to talk about with this next one, Brent. Maine travels to Norman to pick up a paycheck. That's a long way to go.
Here
it is. Bears. FCS team, exactly what Oklahoma seems to need right now after the stretch that the Sooners have been on. Jackson Arnold back in at quarterback. Still a very unsettled situation at the wide receiver spots. I thought Oklahoma at the running back and tight end positions got really nice production last week in Oxford, but it's just going to take more than that week in and week out in this league. So Oklahoma, typically you look at these games in November and you think, this is a chance to just play a lot of people and just, get healthy and, get back into SEC play. I think for Oklahoma, it's a valuable opportunity because they obviously are not settled in a lot of areas with the offense in mind. Defense has been what it was supposed to be, I think, for large stretches of this season. But, Oklahoma 34.5-point favorite. I guess the only news here, a couple things, if this game is in any way competitive, and also if Oklahoma continues to sustain injuries that it really can't afford.
No, I agree. Now, Jatavia Barnes, their running back, he has showed up has been a welcome addition. My understanding is they may get Deion Burks, their wide receiver, back for one of the last two games, which I would imagine would include Alabama in Norman. But they needed a break. They need a win. They need some confidence to go along with this. Trav, wouldn't you take this game to maybe experiment a little bit? I know it's deep into the season, but they've had so many injuries, still trying to get that offensive line going, still trying to really settle on a quarterback as they rotate. I'm just curious what Brent Venables does with this game. I mean, do you just run the ball, get a 24-3 and call it a day? Or do you experiment a little bit thinking, I'm going to have maybe some other guys ready if this injury bug continues the rest of the season?
I'd almost look at it like the second week of spring practice and I got a scrimmage coming up. Seriously.
Yes.
I think it's, again, this is a team that looking ahead and especially thinking about Venables and his shelf life potentially.
Really?
As the head coach there at Oklahoma, there's going to have to be a major jump between this year and next year, assuming he's still there, which there's no reason to think Venables won't be in 2025. Yeah. But that's kind of the way I look at it. You know, who have I already identified this season as core tenets of this roster moving forward? You got a quarterback situation. You don't know how that's going to play out. No. You bench both guys. How's that going to work for Jackson Arnold and Michael Hopkins Jr.? One of the two, you're thinking at this point, may not be around next year, if not both. So there's just a lot to consider right now for Brent Venables and that coaching staff. And offensively, just who the heck are we?
Yeah, really.
Because it's been essentially an 8 or 9 game waste to this point. Now, last week, we saw Jackson Arnold involved early in the design run game. I think he has to be. I think Jackson Arnold has to be kind of like Jackson Dart from Ole Miss.
Yep,
to me, when I watch him on the same field last week, I'm like, well, that's older Jackson Dart for Ole Miss, and this is a younger version for Oklahoma. I think the usage of Jackson Arnold has to be similar. I'm not saying you're running 15, 20 times a game, but similar to Lane with the zone read game and the RPO, that's where he's got to be able to help you at least be a threat, a presence with his legs. Hey, let's talk about that cocktail party coming up on Saturday afternoon from Everbank Stadium on the banks of the St. John's River. I told the story before, Brent. I think Florida Georgia was one of the very, I know it was one of the very first college football games I ever attended because I think I was like 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, right.
And it was, you know, the parents weren't together. You know, they were divorced. Mm-hmm. And so I think my weekend with Pops fell on the Florida Georgia weekend. And I'm guessing my mom wouldn't let him out of it. You know, he kind of had to have me and my brother.
Yeah.
So I, in retrospect, I think that's why I got to go to the Florida Georgia game because he kind of had to take me down there.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's so vivid even today. You know, you talk about foundational formative memories of your sporting fan life. And that is right there for me because I remember getting out of Pops's 28 foot long Buick LeSabre in 1976 or so.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got out of that immaculate candy apple red baby, the first thing I smelled, I didn't even know it at the time, but it was definitely bourbon.
Yeah, I'm sure.
As soon as I stepped out of that land yacht of Pops. But that's how far back this goes for me. Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of years the games haven't been overly competitive. It's like one team is clearly better year in and year out. You get your classics like 80 and some others for sure. But Georgia, the clear favorite, I think this game opened at like 13.5 or so, maybe it was higher. But it's at 16.5 for the Dogs. Right now, there seems to be some budding optimism for Florida. That's almost totally associated, I think, with DJ Lagway at the quarterback position. But answer me this, because I've been picking up on this from Northeast Florida here in the last few days. There seems to be this growing sentiment that if Billy Napier can just get to 6 wins now, I think it was 7 or 8 in the offseason and in the preseason. Now it seems like because of Lagway in this – momentum that they seem to have with freshman quarterback.
Yeah.
If Napier can get to 6 and that secures Lagway in Gainesville for the foreseeable future, that seems to be maybe more the chatter that I'm hearing. I don't know about you.
No, I would agree with the same thing. And I heard this even before the season began, but basically everywhere I went around here is, well, what we want is this team to be looking better in November. Well, truth of the matter is, I give them credit to that point where they are. Now, unfortunately, they won't have Eugene Wilson III at receiver and Jason Marshall at quarterback, who maybe is their best NFL prospect, is unfortunately out for the season. So that's certainly going to hurt. And also Montrell Johnson not playing is going to hurt. But they do have some young guys, and that's where their strength is right now. They're, the pass protection numbers are getting a little bit better. Jaden Bott, running back.
Really good looking freshman.
Yeah, he really is. He had a big game against Kentucky. Doesn't mean that he'll have one against Georgia. But look, Trav, you know Kirby. This stat here of the Georgia senior class, look at me, the first one to go undefeated at 4-0 against Florida since 1983. I'm guessing they have that on the wall somewhere in the football building, and that's a number they're looking at.
Florida seems to have improved of late on the defensive side of the ball.
No question.
The performance against Tennessee, played well against Kentucky. The question for me is Florida defensively at a point where it can make Georgia uncomfortable offensively.
Right. Yes.
Texas at home wasn't really able to make Georgia uncomfortable. And when I think of uncomfortable for the Georgia offense right now, and I know over the final three quarters or so in Tuscaloosa, it didn't look this way because Carson Beck lit it up.
Right.
But to me, that is still putting Georgia in a position of playing away from its line of scrimmage and having to do things more down the field and on the perimeter. Not that Carson Beck isn't capable of making those throws, but for whatever reason, he hasn't been exceptionally consistent this year. So if Georgia can just line up, and of the all the ironies, Trevor Etienne, the former Florida Gator, he should be motivated as well. But maybe the Florida defense is for that. But yeah, I think that's what the game goes back to. And, you know, for that to happen, they're going to have to first and foremost show that they have reached a place where they have not been of late. And that's up front, Florida, on both sides of the ball.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and for Georgia to take Ratledge on the offensive line comes back, we think, or
getting
at least
they're getting guys back. Yes. It sounds like. Yeah,
absolutely. But you're right. They've got to put some pressure on Carson Beck and make him uncomfortable. But look, that is your reality if you're Florida, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss. And then this is the part of the schedule that Gator fans were dreading. So
the respite is Florida State.
Yeah,
at the end.
It really is, isn't it?
That's what you're looking at right now if you're a Florida fan saying that's our sixth win. That's how we get to a bowl game right now, because those other games are just, it's brutal. You get Ole Miss at home, I guess, but wow. It's going to be rough, no doubt about it, starting with that road trip early next week to Austin, Texas, after the cocktail party on Saturday. We keep it moving with Saturday's action. Later window, late afternoon, UMass travels to Starkville, Mississippi State, looking a lot like a winless SEC team in year one under Jeff Lebby, but a chance here against the Minutemen. Mississippi State, just an 18-point favorite. I say just because you're talking about UMass here, but any win right now would look good to Mississippi State as it tries to get to the two-win number in year one under Lebby.
Trav, do you think when you look at these defensive numbers for Mississippi State, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that are like 124 in the nation up to 133. And so transfer portal for early signing day, I give Lebby credit to where with Van Buren, they're making progress, and also with Kevin Coleman and wide receiver who's stepping up. But boy,
ripped last week.
Really did. And look, this is the shoring up that defense to make it at least from terrible to average is a real priority for them.
I've said it on some earlier episodes here of second helping. And if you're Lebby, you don't want to panic. It is year one.
No, absolutely.
But you also have to be honest with yourself when you get to the postseason or the end of the regular season and you do that introspection. Are we good enough from a coordinator perspective? Can we be better?
Yes.
Do I really believe in this person that I have in that spot? And I'm talking about Coleman Hutzler in his first year as the coordinator there at Mississippi State. And I don't think Levy's the only coach in that type of situation. No. There's hard calls that you got to make. And I just think the earlier in your regime you do that, and again, not to panic, but if you're just being honest, right, and rational about the situation, you need to get things set the way you want them and feel really, really good about, because as we've seen, there's no guarantee 4, 5, 6 years like there were a few years back, no doubt about it. Tex Tider checking in here. Here's our guy.
Sends
along a howdy there. We appreciate Tex and the rest of you checking in with us live here on Ryer on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed to the channel as of yet, hit that subscribe button if you don't mind. If you also hit that notification bell, you'll be alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. And we always appreciate a thumbs up. Hit that like button for us. We would appreciate that greatly, too. So as we move along here, another game where it gets interesting. This has sort of Ole Miss, Arkansas vibes. It's just in prime time, which probably works less to the advantage of Texas A&M. But, boy, Mike Elko's team coming off a very, very impressive second half in that win over LSU last Saturday night at Kyle Field. South Carolina coming off the bye should be feeling pretty good about itself after taking apart Oklahoma the last time we saw Shane Beamer's Gamecocks. This is, again, 7:30 Eastern, ABC. A&M is a real slight favorite going into Williams-Brice Stadium. Brent, what's your sort of feeling here about 48 hours as we get ready for the Aggies and the Cocks?
As we have talked for years, this is what we call the maturity game. Are you mature enough after a big win and everybody told you how great you are and you've gone up in the rankings and they're talking about you going to the SEC championship game? Are you mature enough to go into a very hostile environment and be able to come out with a win? I think Elko, you've got to continue with Marcell Reed, do you not?
That's what I was going to ask you. We talked about it earlier in the week. I don't know if Elko's come out with that.
He hasn't.
I don't see why he would.
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely works to your advantage. I'll say this. If I'm Shane Beamer and I'm the South Carolina staff, I'm getting ready for Marcell Reed than I am Wigman. Now, and mostly because I know my football team, if I'm Shane Beamer, I know that if I was coaching A&M, I wouldn't want a pocket guy against my front seven or my front defensive front that can get after the quarterback pretty good. So, Marcell Reed would make more sense. That doesn't mean that's what'll happen.
True.
But I think Reed's the tougher matchup for South Carolina.
Yeah, I agree with that. And listen, on an aside here, I was listening to an LSU beat writer yesterday who said, well, the problem with LSU is they didn't prepare at all for Marcell Reed. So that certainly didn't help them. But we'll get into that on another day. But again, what Mike Elko has done, the little bit of talk about, well, could Mike Elko be the coach of the year in the SEC? I mean, he certainly would be on the list. He's not worried about that right now. My question with this is, and it always comes back to this, and people have just got to understand in this league, I think they can, but can that Trapp, can that A&M offensive line block that front seven of South Carolina, who has given everybody they played all kinds of problems?
That's why I think Reed has to at least play a lot if he isn't the starter, because, you know, we get on Connor Wiegman pretty good. But to be fair to him, A&M's not really set up right now to run the type of offense that suits Connor Wiegman, where he can be protected and you can get more guys out into routes and he can be prolific throwing the football. It benefits A&M right now to have a guy like Reed who you can really run the football with too, between what he can bring to the table and what the two backs and the way they run the football between the tackles.
Yeah.
It's just more reason to stick with Marcel Reed. I think A&M wins this game Saturday night, but I do think it'll be, if you retro football and you like, let's say 24-20, 27-24 defensive fronts dominating at times, this is probably going to be the game for you. Should be a tight one in Cola, and we'll see if A&M. Look, if A&M gets past this hurdle, they're great. Early November 30th, and then they host Texas.
Oh, yeah.
When you think about college football playoff candidates in the SEC, A&M gets through this, I'd be shocked if they're not 10-1 with Texas coming to town to end the regular season.
Now, let me throw this out real quick, and I'll be brief about this. Trev, there are a lot of questions about Shane Beamer at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And I understand that, but they pushed LSU – they pushed Alabama basically to the limit. Now, if they have another one of these with A&M, where A&M's hanging on by a thread in the fourth quarter, Trev, how does it, even though with the losses, how does this change the way we look at Shane Beamer as we go into November?
Yeah, I think it's this game I referenced, the Ole Miss-Arkansas game earlier. I think it's similar from that perspective with the coaches of the home teams. I think Sam Pittman in a similar spot as Shane Beamer. I don't get the sense that right now Shane Beamer's in a lot of trouble.
Right.
There's still a month of football to be played, still a Clemson game to be played. That matters, obviously, in that state.
Right.
But I think recruiting-wise, the vibe seems to be pretty positive for Shane Beamer, and that matters as well. But so, yeah, I would think he's okay, but at home, South Carolina this season hasn't been what I'm sure it would like to be, you know, in some situations for sure. Boy, talk about teams that are spiraling. What about the Kentucky Wildcats? Kentucky goes to Oxford about a month ago, shocks the Ole Miss Rebels, then proceeds to just drop the next three games.
Yeah, really.
Very, very Mark Stoops-unlike in that regard, and really in some ways not all that competitive in its last two losses
right
to Florida on the road, and then those final three quarters against Auburn at Kroger Field last Saturday night.
Right. Yeah, and my concern here, Trav, is that, and I like Stoops, I think Stoops has done a really solid job at Kentucky, has recruited the state of Ohio well, and not get into all the battles with like the Bamas and the Georgias, and he's done a good job of that. Here's my concern. He's about to finish with a losing SEC record for the fifth time in the past 6 years. Still not where they need to be offensively. They're actually rotating quarterbacks a bit. Tennessee obviously is one of the better second half teams in the league. First half, they're really struggling. But look, we have a lot of time to talk about this. But Trav, it makes me wonder: does Kentucky and Stoops just kind of call it a day at the end of the year, and say, look, we've had a great run here? I think, and not skip the game. I do think Tennessee is still too much for them in this game. But you can also see them, could they have a performance like they did against Georgia in a game they should have won? So I just think Stoops in the next few months or next few weeks is certainly worth a closer look.
Well, it almost happened after last season. We thought for a brief stint overnight that what Mark Stoops was headed to Texas A&M.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of Mike Elko. So you wonder if the past maybe comes up a little bit too, as things gradually deteriorate over the course of this season. I don't see him getting any better. Saturday night, you got Tennessee coming off a bye.
Right.
You got Tennessee really with everything in front of it. I think Tennessee goes Kentucky at home and then Mississippi State at home next week. So it's setting up beautifully before that big trip to Athens that's going to determine a lot. I think Tennessee goes to Vandy. You know, Diego and the Commodores would love to ruin things for the Vols there to cap the regular season. But Tennessee, to me, is kind of like Texas A&M. You know, Texas A&M still has a big one out there after this weekend in Texas.
Yes.
Same for Tennessee with Georgia. But kind of take care of everything else, and you're probably 10-2, and you're at least going to have a right to complain probably if you don't make that 12-team field. So there you go. Bye week this weekend too, Brent, for a lot of the star power in the league. LSU and Alabama on the bye, preparing for their huge matchup a week from Saturday night in Baton Rouge. The Texas Longhorns on a bye, going to host those Florida Gators early a week from Saturday out in Austin. But you know what? The Alabama fans, they're still here on the show, man. Every day.
Absolutely.
American.
They are.
Let's roll tide, he says. So no bye weeks. Timothy, also good morning. Roll tide. Boy, these Alabama fans, no such thing as a week off, Brent.
Oh, no, no, not at all. I understand that. And look, as we wrap things up, I know it's another conference, and I won't go into any detail, Trev, that there's some big games in the ACC. I'm fascinated where they're going. I mean, you've got a resurgent Clemson that is taking no prisoners, hosting Louisville, Florida State hosting North Carolina. Mack Brown is 0-11. Versus FSU, which is a bit of a surprise that one is going on. You've got Duke at Miami, a noon game, and the Canes still
rolling. And he is going home.
He is. And look, one of the bigger games in that conference is Pitt at SMU, in this Pittsburgh team that is undefeated with Eli Holstein, for the former Bama transfer at quarterback, and Cade Bell, who is Kerwin Bell's son, as the offensive coordinator in that situation. So without belaboring the point, just throwing out in some interesting games in that ACC.
Kerwin Bell, the throwing Mayoan.
It sure is. Quarterback.
Son Cade, as you said, a rising star, young guy. But, boy, with Eli Holstein and that Pitt offense, the Alabama transfer at quarterback, putting up some numbers. And you also, of course, have outside the ACC, you got Ohio State at Penn State. Boy, seems like a big one for Ryan Day at this point. I mean, getting serious John Cooper vibes, you know, so – he might want to take care of business. And, hey, James Franklin needs to prove it too, you know. Big game for both those head coaches at State College.
Well, and listen, Ryan Day hasn't beaten a top five opponent since 2022. He's lost four straight. And then James Franklin hadn't beat a top five opponent, Trap, since 2016.
It's longer than that.
Yeah, he's lost 10 straight. So, listen – does it surprise you like it does me when these jobs come open and for whatever reason, here's Franklin's name among the top three as soon as somebody's fired?
Good agent. That's agenting.
It is.
Good agent works, what that is. Hey, Brent, always a lot of fun with you right here on Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Look forward to recapping all of the Week 10 action coming up early next week with Brent here on Ryer on YouTube. Brent, have a great weekend, my man.
You too, brother. Take care, and hope everybody enjoys Halloween and the games on Saturday.
Be safe out there with the trick-or-treaters, folks. Yes. No doubt about that. For Brent, Travis, thanking you once again. Until next time, so long, everybody.